Thanks so much, Brian and Donna, both for your excellent reading and your nimble feet in getting back and forth to all of the things. It was great to hear your bell playing as well. It's always one of my favorite Sundays when we do that. So thank you so much. So I have a distinct memory when I was growing up of having gotten in an argument with my parents. I don't have a very distinct memory, oddly, about what the specifics of the argument was at this point. But I remember being so frustrated, essentially, that there was a consequence that I was being given for something that I felt like I should be able to do that. I was being perfectly reasonable. I've got things figured out. What are you doing? And so I sort of stepped into a very common rite of passage, I think, for people, and I was packing up a bag to move out and go off on my own because I knew that things were better and I was going to run away and figure things out that way. I felt like I didn't need to be in the family anymore. That was unfair enough that I need to go off on my own.
How old were
you? I was probably 9 or 10. So, and I've had 30 years since then to keep figuring things out. So, yeah, I must really know what it is now. Not really. But I think, you know, some of us are laughing, smiling, nodding our heads because we know that that is, in one form or another, a common rite of passage. This idea, we do want to learn how to go out on our own, to be able to be independent, to understand how to operate in the world without being completely dependent on our parents or other people. But we often try to jump the gun on this. And we find ways of saying, nope, I want to define family, I want to define the way things should be in my own way. And I'm curious, other people have had that experience? Anyone have like an especially good story of either you having done that for your parents or someone did that to you and said, I don't want to be part of this family anymore. I'm taking off. Yeah? Seen that some? Yeah. And I want to acknowledge, by the way, that there is sometimes these funny things that younger kids do in particular where we don't really know what are we actually going to do. I know I basically like did some theater of taking my suitcase and banging it down the stairs so that everyone in the house heard what I was doing and that was going to be a thing. But I didn't actually get out the door. I waited to make sure that this got a reaction and that, you know, maybe that would do something. And my parents were gracious. They stood their ground about the situation, but they also helped me feel that sense of belonging at the same time, that I didn't have to run away to make that point. But we also know that there are times where people can say, I don't want to be a part of this family anymore, and they're older. It's more serious. Maybe there are other circumstances happening in their lives that make that situation very painful. It takes a lot more to restore the connection. And sometimes it may even feel like things are never quite the same again. People run away, walk away, don't talk to you for a long time, you get in a big blowout fight, and figuring that all out again is really difficult. What it means to figure out how to be a family is often really hard. We have different ideas of belonging. We have different ideas of who should get the final say about things. We have trouble connecting with each other really the way that we would hope. These questions of family and belonging and how we operate in the world, bringing belonging hopefully to our immediate family, but also potentially those around us as part of God's family, are at the heart of both of our verses today. We want to remember we're going through our sermon series now of looking at the story of Esther in light of the I am sayings throughout the book of John that Jesus gives us. And Esther, we can remember, is the one book of the Bible where God is not explicitly mentioned. So we can really relate, unless we each have our own internal narrator of God is doing this, and therefore I knew exactly what to do, which I don't think happens for most of us, doesn't happen for me. But that we are doing our best to follow God's ways. We're doing our best to live as God's people, whether it's always easy or not. And especially in Esther, Esther and Mordecai, her uncle, are operating in a world that is full of injustice. They're trying to be God's people in a place that doesn't always celebrate or accept what it means to live God's values. We've seen the oppression that they are dealing with, the capriciousness and the pettiness of how authority works for King Xerxes and his officials in their kingdom, and how that's having impact to Mordecai and Esther as a threat individually, but also for all of their people. And we can imagine that that type of thing could happen for other people throughout the empire as well. In the middle of that, when we're wondering, how is it that we make sense of such a difficult world, when we relate to that on our own, wondering how God helps us navigate things that are difficult and full of oppression, we can look at things like the I Am statements of Jesus in the Gospel of John to remind us, how is it that God operates at all times and all circumstances with faithfulness to help us navigate those difficult circumstances? And we can see in the statement that Jesus had today, before Abraham was, I am, is spoken into a circumstance where people are trying to figure out what it means to belong and have family within the family of God, and there's tension and debate about how that is going. Jesus is speaking especially to Jewish leaders in particular, and they think that they have a good idea of what it means to be a part of God's family. They say, we are descendants of Abraham. We follow God. We see ourselves as children of God. But Jesus is pushing back on their definitions and understandings because he knows that the type of belonging that holds on to them, that they have as expectations, is not actually bringing healing and wholeness and God's true life to their lives or to the lives of people around them. It says at the beginning of the verses that these are people that in fact did believe that Jesus had God's authority in some way, and yet Jesus knows that they could be ready to kill him if his authority was fully expressed. And he said, you cannot just say, we think Jesus is great. Right now he's talking about the people that we don't like. He's speaking up against them. He's speaking up for us. But as soon as Jesus changes the expectations and says, I'm not going to do things in response to this the way that you are used to, the way that you want to, full of violence and counter-oppression and mistreating people because you feel mistreated, that's not the kingdom that I came to bring, you are going to get very upset. So I have to redefine family and belonging and offering that sense of life to you. Because you are willing to look more for keeping people out of God's family, for tearing people down, if they are not being in God's family exactly like you are. So Jesus uses the I am saying that he goes before Abraham, making it as clear as possible. I am operating with God's authority. I am an agent of God's family and have been throughout history. And when you see me offering belonging, when you see me offering salvation life to those who have normally been rejected and left out and told that they have no place, I am operating as God has wanted me to do so, even if that upsets your own expectations. So he's challenging these leaders as they are claiming to be a part of a special group, and that they are saying, we can justify ourselves because we're Abraham's descendants, so we can cast people out. We can bring death to others. We can have our own sense of specialness be over and above anyone else's sense of dignity. But Jesus knows that is very much not of God. And so Jesus is instead inviting them to let go of that way of life and be free of a slavery, Jesus says, a slavery to cycles of injustice and destruction that they are trapped in, that they can't get out of. And he says, you should let go of that. You don't have to be slaves anymore. You can be part of God's family, even though it's different than maybe you are used to. And this is helpful to us because we see Xerxes and Haman trapped as slaves in this same cycle of injustice and oppression in our story with Esther. They are fully trapped in thinking that the way authority should be used is in a way that they think is good, when it is unjust, when it is capricious, when it is arbitrary, when it is petty, when it brings destruction, when it could bring restoration and wholeness. In the moment that Haman is exposed, Esther says, Haman is trying to kill not only me, my uncle Mordecai, but all of the Jewish people just because Mordecai didn't bow down to him a certain way. Xerxes recognizes this at first as being unfair, especially because it's connected to someone who he has positive emotions for. But just because Esther is willing to speak up against injustice does not mean that Xerxes and Haman know how to operate fully within justice and with justice in response. Notice what happens. Xerxes flies off the handle in a rage and just storms out. When he comes back and Haman is pleading to Esther, because Haman probably knew, I've spent years with this person knowing how to manipulate him and get what I want, mistreat other people when he gets upset so that then I can get more advantage. I know how this game goes, and now I'm on the wrong side of it. I shouldn't have been playing it the whole time because it's come back to bite me. He knows that there's probably not a good chance because that's just the way things work. So instead, he pleads to Esther. She is willing to speak up about injustice. Maybe she will help me. And then when Xerxes comes back, he even sees Esther and Haman. He doesn't take this chance to say, all right, I was really mad, let's figure this out. He didn't find evidence for had Haman even done the thing that Esther was accusing him of. He didn't find out, is there something that we can do about this to just stop it and move along and make Haman behave in a more just and appropriate way? He comes back and his response is still that rage. And his offense about how Haman is treating Esther is because he sees Esther still essentially as a sexual object. You're talking to her, you're pleading to her, you're on your knees before her asking for help. It must be that you are violating my wife in this way because I see her primarily as a possession. So there's still all of these things where we see that same injustice cycling through in their lives. Esther has done something brave. She has stepped out, risking herself. Even going back earlier in the story when she was going before Xerxes, knowing that she could be killed for going before him when she wasn't asked. She's making sure that even when that happens, that she is looking out for not only herself, but her people, seeking belonging and help and justice for many people, creating a sense of family, and that this can have impact not only for her lives, but on the lives of subjects throughout the empire, extending belonging and grace and justice to everyone. Even to those people who are caught in being the authority figures, who are exerting injustice and oppression on other people. They have the opportunity to be something different, to do something different, to bring success and life for the people who they're supposed to serve. But Xerxes and Haman are completely trapped instead in the inhumanity, in the rashness, in the pettiness that has defined their lives and defined other people's lives and brought them risk and harm. We should notice then, too, that after Esther announces Haman is doing this unjust thing, Xerxes responds, that she also is taken out of the picture. So she steps forward with agency, with dignity. But again, Xerxes and Haman, other than Haman begging for her, forget about it. She doesn't become like a witness for any further testimony or trial. She's not given the right to be able to say, Esther, what do you think should happen about this circumstance? She's bypassed. So again, we see these cycles, this slavery to a way of operating that is not actually good. And so Haman and Xerxes have their personal rash reactions. And then it's a eunuch who is a friend of the king's and of Esther's. But the eunuch is the one that proposes the punishment. So I want us to notice in particular that both Esther's wishes, her potential desire for something that could have been more just and not just continued cycles of violence and oppression is taken out. And so, and we also don't see that God's will is necessarily going to be what's followed. We might feel this initial emotional guttural reaction of like, yeah, Haman was doing all these horrible things and he made his bed. Now he's going to lie and that something bad is going to happen to Haman too. But this is one of those places that we can especially notice that God's voice is absent. That justice is moving forward without God's expectations being part of what is considered. So it can be easy for us to think that Haman being impaled is a part of Esther's triumph. But in fact, Haman's fate is a tragedy of the cycles of injustice that he has participated in and that he and Xerxes are trapped in and slaves to. It is quite likely that had Esther been able to be more involved in the process of justice in response to that, if God's voice about what true justice looks like for restoration, for new possibility, for operating as an authority with better behavior and not just the cycles of oppression and violence over and over and over and over again, that God would have wanted something different to happen. And so it's into these cycles that repeat and repeat all through history that Jesus' words are especially important, inviting us to a different kind of life, one that is eternal and timeless, like Jesus being before Abraham in more ways than one. Because can't we all admit that we would want to get out of cycles of slavery, out of things that trap us, the types of things that trap Haman and Xerxes, and continually tempt us to seek each other's destructions, to be at risk of the destructive behavior of other people. We don't want to see that happen over and over again. Just who gets to be on top in the cycle of, I didn't like what happened, I'm going to hurt somebody else about it. But you can eventually end up on the bottom of that same cycle too. And that's not the type of family of justice and restoration that God puts forward. We want to be in God's family, the one that Jesus invites us to, being close to God, having God's power in our lives to bring health and wholeness for us, but also for other people, to see people who are being oppressed and mistreated have their dignity lifted up, but also people who feel like the only way to be powerful and to have benefit is to mistreat other people, have a better way of living their lives so that they aren't mistreating people and taking away their own humanity with that treatment. We know that this is hard, by the way. If we think back through the history of Israel, one of the great stories of God's intervention into the people of God is rescue from slavery in Egypt in the Exodus. And then they spent 40 years in the desert on their way to the Promised Land. But in those 40 years, you know what one of the most common things that people said to God was? This is too hard. I want to go back and be a slave. At least then I knew what was going to happen. I knew what I was going to do from day to day. They gave me some food. Yeah, I was mistreated, but it was familiar. Familiar things, things that become comfortable for us, even if they're not for our best, sometimes they do hold on to us. They make us like slaves. We need somebody to shake us all the way out of it and give us a new way of being, a new part of people to belong to that don't have to work that way in order for us to get out of it. It's hard to let go of our fears. It's hard to let go of our desires. It's hard to let go of things that we've seen everybody else chase after to get their benefit and believe, no, God's way of treating each other differently will actually bring us more benefit and bring other people more benefit. I can let go of that. Wendy and I recently have been watching a show. It's on Apple TV called Try. It's about a couple named Jason and Nikki, who initially they start the show trying to get pregnant and have a baby. They want to start a family. But they are not able to do that. And so eventually their focus turns instead to adopting children and trying for that as well. And they do get placed, have a brother and sister placed with them as they go through that about midway through the show. And so they're excited about this idea. We get to be a family. There's all this new possibility. And yet, even in those moments, the show is honest that it's not easy. Just because you're excited and that a family is a beautiful thing, there are still difficult things that they're going through. Jason has a crisis of realizing, yeah, I wanted a family, but oh man, I have to change my life a lot more than I expected. His biggest thing I can really relate to, he's a Tottenham Hotspur fan for soccer in England, which I also am, and the son that he wants to adopt is an Arsenal fan, which is their like big rivalry. So it'd be like an OSU fan adopting a Michigan fan and the tension of that. And so he's like, am I willing to let go of even those things that, like, maybe they're not a big deal, they shouldn't be, but they are for me, and it feels really hard? Am I willing to change my life to be a part of a family? His partner, Nikki, spends most of the time pretending that their lives are perfect because she doesn't want to be judged. And she has to come to the point of realizing, no, to be a family, we have to be honest. We have to work through things together in a real way and not hide the stuff that's not perfect and have it come back to get us later. The daughter that they're going to adopt, Princess, spends a lot of time acting out to see if her parents will enforce boundaries. And when they do, will they help her find a better way, or will they just snap and say, you're a bad kid, I don't want you anymore? And are people able to be faithful to her? Little Tyler, the son, he has a moment of worrying because he overhears something and misunderstands it that Nikki says, that he thinks he's too little, so people wouldn't really want him. And he has to know that even if I'm little, even if I'm weird, that people can love me and want me and I can be a part of a family. Those are all their own little versions that we can maybe relate to of how even when we step into a family, sometimes it's hard to believe that that can be for us. Sometimes it's hard to believe that we can be the types of people that live fully healthy for each other. And at the extreme, we see people like Haman and Xerxes, even when invited by Esther to live justly, that they just are trapped in the cycles of injustice. The Jews that Jesus speaks to are another extreme example of this. They're invited to live fully in the legacy of Abraham following God. Abraham, we can remember, was invited to be a blessing to all the people around him, that through him, God would bless not only Abraham, but all the peoples of the world and through his descendants. That's the legacy that they're living in, but instead they're trapped in wanting to, I want to be special, and I want to hurt the other people who might want to hurt me. I don't want to be a blessing. And I'll even hurt Jesus if he challenges me to be a blessing instead. I'll try to stone him. And so instead we see Esther as this contrast, willing to put herself at risk, willing to protect other people, not only herself, but extend that to others around her. Willing also to encourage those people around her who want to do mistreatment to have a better way of life that would bring more sense of family and belonging and justice to more people, not to continually seek destruction. This is a beautiful expression of family in its own way, and it's something that we can follow on our own, again, in big or small ways, continuing to offer belonging, continuing to offer grace, continuing to offer dignity and true treatment to others where we might otherwise feel the sense of, I want to get over on you. I want things to work out for me even if they don't work out for you. Staying in these various cycles of slavish destruction to the world can still be really tempting. We can see, we think, other people benefiting from operating that way. So even when we see an opportunity to be like God's family, we can get sucked back in. So how do we get out of that and live the eternal, holistic, healthy way that Jesus invites us to? Esther gives us this great example, not only of willing to look out for other people, but being willing to say the truth of who she is, and even the truth of what she struggles with or that might not bring her advantage. She says, I'm a Jew, I'm the one who could get hurt. You may not think I'm very important because I'm a woman. I'm your wife, more as an object than as this love match. And I'm of the wrong ethnicity. But she takes away the power that the oppression that Xerxes has could have done to bring her shame or to cast her to the side. And she steps forward and says, this is who I am, and God can do amazing things with it. Whether you like it or not, I know that this is valuable. I know that this has dignity. And so it takes away the power of selfishness. It takes away the power of separation. And it gives the opportunity for God's power to move forward, even in those vulnerable places, and see true salvation life happen for all people. Esther was willing to do something in that step of hope, that step of faith, that even if I'm doing something risky, me showing that I'm willing to do that on behalf of other people will have its own power that God can use where people have not been willing to see dignity and worth before. So sometimes it is true that as we follow Esther's examples, we try to be a part of God's family, that we will do things that show our vulnerability, that say, I'm having a hard time with this. I'm really angry. I don't know what to do. We'll reveal things in our lives that may need change and growth and development. We might have to challenge ourselves to let go of something that has held us back and is not helping us, but that we're familiar with. But we can do this in confidence because we know that God, over and over again, just like Jesus says, for all situations and all times, I am. I am here whether you're vulnerable. I am here whether you know what to do. I am creating a family that will come alongside you. I can give you new life full of healing and wholeness and justice if you are participating in my family. Trying has examples of this for each character that give it this amazing hope where they're willing to say, yeah, I'm this thing that maybe some people think is not great, but I'm also so much more than that. And that's an expression of God bringing that out of them. Jason admits that it's not easy for him to change himself and it's going to take a long process. But he realizes what he's really good at, whether he changes himself right away or not, is supporting other people for what they need. And so maybe he can't do something for himself, but if you ask me what you need for you, I'll do it. Nikki continues to be not sure of whether or not she's good enough, but she becomes very confident in saying, I'm a person who's willing to learn. And so whether I'm good enough or not, that's not the end of who I am. I'll keep improving. Princess shows that, yeah, I act up sometimes, but that boldness also means sometimes I can step up. And so when something is needed, when my brother needs looking out for, when my family needs looking out for, when the court needs to hear that my parents are doing a good job, I'm bold enough to step out. It's not just that I act out, I step up. Tyler may be insecure about being weird and little, but he's amazing at connecting with other people who are outsiders. And he uses that love to help bring the family together as well. And one of my favorites in the show is Jason's dad. He's a real inside-outside type of person. He speaks badly about poor people and people from other countries throughout the show. They're kind of embarrassed of him. And so you wonder, like, how helpful is he going to be? But he is really, really proud of the fact that his family is expanding. And so he does this thing where he decides, yeah, maybe I don't know exactly what I think of these kids right at first, but they're my family now. So my circle of protection is going to get bigger. And as fierce as I am about stuff, and maybe sometimes people think it's embarrassing, I'm going to say that you're my insiders, and I'm going to be as fierce for you. And so he loves on those kids. He speaks up for them in the court. He does goofy things because even though he normally would never try to like what someone else liked, for the kids, he'll do anything they ask. He dresses up as a wizard and embarrasses himself. All of these sweet things to show you're a part of my family. And I might be a little bit weird. I might be a little bit embarrassing sometimes. But I'm going to grow my sense of inside. And maybe doing that for you means I can learn how to do that for other people. And so those are the examples that we can take encouragement from. And from ones like Esther. And we can take a little bit of warning to not get trapped like Haman and Xerxes and the Jews that wanted to stone Jesus did. We can recognize that if there's something in our lives that is holding on to us, capturing us, encouraging us to stay in cycles of destruction, let's ask God, help me let go of it. Help me be free of it. Even if it's familiar, help me recognize that it's not serving me the way that you love on me and serve me. Help me to open myself up. And then we can similarly open our eyes to the ways that God may be inviting us to live freshly as children, with vulnerabilities, but then also with full of possibility to grow for how then we can be a part of God's salvation life. A life that will bring to us and to the world protection, service, healing, empowerment, and draws people together as family that can bring about the transformation of everything. That's the children that we get to be together. We'll move now into our time of offering where we take small steps to give what we can, even like kids, even in vulnerability, and see what God can do with it. And I look forward to doing all those other ways with you in coming weeks as well.